Daniel's back.
That's what I do.
Alex.
All right. I would like
10 seconds.
I don't know, that box is really good.
Go ahead.
We're good.
All right. Let's go ahead and call the July 11th meeting of the Planning Commission to order. Madam Clerk, can I have you call roll, please?
Yes. Good morning. Commissioner Shaw?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
And Chair B. Clement?
Here. All right. If I could have everybody stand and join me in the flag, please. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Is there any public comment on the items that are not listed on the agenda? All right, so I'll go ahead and close public comment. Mark, would you like to give us some planning staff updates?
I would. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. There were two actions of interest today at the Board of Supervisors this past Tuesday, July 9th, at their meeting. The board approved amendments to Title 22 and Title 23 related to cannabis activities, and the vote on that was 4-1. And the second item that they took action on, they denied the appeal and upheld the Planning Commission's approval for a development plan, coastal development permit to allow new temporary event programming at the Cambrian Christmas Market to operate for 15 years. And that was approved with a 5-0 vote. Your next meeting on July 25th has been canceled due to a lack of quorum for that meeting. The next scheduled meeting was Thursday, August 8th. We only had one item on that meeting agenda, which was just a time extension. So we elected to move that item to August 22nd. So you will have no meeting held on August 8th, which I think will be back in the large room, the chambers. So this may be our last meeting in our meeting. Temporary. So thank you for bearing with us. Yes, so to confirm, July 25th and August 8th are both canceled. So on the docket for your August 22nd meeting are two items. A request by People Self-Help Housing for a second one-year time extension to a previously approved vesting tentative map and the conditional use permit to subdivide an existing 4-acre parcel into residential plan development. The project is within residential single-family land use category and is located at 1051 Weimer Way in the community of San Miguel. And the second item on August 22nd is a hearing to consider a general plan amendment to change land use category from commercial services to residential multifamily. It's a site totaling 0.68 acres. The project is located at 249 Ash Street and 273 Birch Street in the community of Cayucos. And I believe that completes our staff updates.
Great, thank you, Mark. Are there any questions? All right, perfect. So at this point, have I one item on the consent agenda. Are there any questions or consent agenda? If not, do we need a public comment on the consent agenda? Is there any public comment?
No, I'd like to
close public comment on the consent agenda.
The consent agenda.
Second.
And Clerk, the roll call, please.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Chair Beacon?
Yes. All right. Perfect. Moving on to the hearings. Madam Clerk, could you introduce the first hearing item, please?
Yes. Today's first hearing is a hearing to consider a request by Jeff Croker to amend a building envelope on parcel 6 of Tract 1931. The request includes adding an additional 18,755 square foot building envelope to construct an accessory dwelling unit in the western portion of an approximate 5.45 acre parcel. County file amend 2023-00005. This is in supervisorial district.
Is there any ex parte from the commissioners?
Yep.
All right, perfect. And Mark, could you go ahead and introduce the project?
Yes, staff presentation today will be by project owner Blake Mulling.
Hey.
Good morning.
All right.
Did you check your screen?
All right.
Morning, Chair Biagana and members of the Planning Commission. I'd like to be sure to speak up. I'm Blake Molly, project manager with the Planning and Building Department. Before us today, the request by Jeff Crocker for an amendment, 2023-00005, to record a building envelope for Lot 6, Tract 1931. This amendment opposes the creation
of difficulties. This amendment proposes.
This amendment proposes the creation of an 18,755 square foot building envelope for an accessory dwelling unit structure or other development as allowed by County Code Title 22.
The proposed project is located.
At 232 Cimarron Lane, approximately 2 miles north of the community of Napomo. The proposed project is within the residential rural land use category. Here we're looking at an aerial image of the overall vicinity of the project site. In this slide, you'll see an overall site plan. Access to the project site will be from Cimarron Lane. You can see the yellow polygon denotes the project site, which is located near the front of the parcel in the center of the property. The green polygon illustrates the existing building envelope. The proposed project was referred to various departments and agencies, including the South County Advisory Council, which recommends approval of this amendment. A memorandum has been provided to update Exhibit B. Condition of approval number 16 will be omitted as it does not apply to the purposes of this amendment. For your convenience, the changes are reflected in the red slash text. Staff is recommending that the commission adopt the addendum to the mitigated negative declaration in compliance with CEQA and approve the amendment, 2023-00005, the Lot 6, Tract 1931, based on the findings of Exhibit A and the revised condition listed in Exhibit B. This concludes staff's presentation. Staff is available to help answer your questions. And then also joining us, I believe, is Mark Vasquez on behalf of MBS Land Surveys and the applicant.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the presentation. Are there any questions at this point? No. All right, perfect. So why don't we go ahead and the applicant has a presentation.
Good morning, Mark Vasquez. I don't have a presentation for you. It's pretty straightforward application.
Great. Any questions for the applicant? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment on this item? All right. So I will go ahead and close public comment. And bring it back to the committee for discussion. Motion.
Good. Project to me, just a clarification, so they would be allowed to possibly build an ADU on this property, and it was interesting that the road splits the property anyway, so it seems like a natural So I guess I'll make a motion and see where it goes. I will move staff's recommendation to adopt the addendum to the mitigated negative declaration in compliance with the California, with CEQA, pursuant to section 15164A and 15162. Approve amendment 2023-00005 to amend the building envelope for parcel 6 of tract 1931 based on the findings listed in exhibit A and the conditions listed in exhibit B. Revised conditions in exhibit B.
Motion, do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Madam Clerk, can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Chair Beacon?
Yes. Moving on to our second hearing item. Madam Clerk, can you introduce that, please?
Our final hearing item is a hearing to consider a request by Climate Hotel of varying questions for a minor use permit to allow up to 40 temporary events per year with a maximum allowance of 150 guests per event. County file N-DRC 2023-00039. This is in Supervisorial District 30, Project Manager Elizabeth Maria.
Is there any ex parte on this item? All right, Mark, would you mind introducing the project team, please?
Yes, presentation today will be by Elizabeth Moreno, private planner, and for support, Cheryl Koo, planning supervisor.
Good morning, Chair and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Elizabeth Moreno, senior planner with the Planning and Building Department. Before you today is a request by Varian Equestrian Center for a minor use permit N-DRC 2023-00039 for temporary events. The reason why this minor use permit is before you today is because it includes a policy interpretation in relation to secondary uses in Thailand. On October 6, 2009, the Board of Supervisors adopted a resolution regarding the interpretation of Ag Policy 6 from the Ag element. The resolution stated that the applicable review authority shall make a determination on a case-by-case basis in consultation with the Agricultural Department on what establishes a primary agricultural use and what is an allowable secondary and incidental use. With that being said, I'll start this presentation by going over the project details, and then I'll move it to the policy interpretation. The applicants requesting approval to allow up to 40 temporary events per year with 150 guests per event. And the events will occur in an 11,000 square feet area of existing landscape turf. The parking will occur on an existing irrigated pasture on site. The site is located at 1275 Corbett Canyon Road in Arroyo Grande. And the project site is located within the agricultural land use category, and it's surrounded by residential, rural lands, and agricultural uses. Here's an aerial view of the parcel, and this arrow is pointing to where the general area where the events will occur. Here's the applicant's site plan. This is where the events will be held on the site. This green area here is the irrigated pasture that where the parking will be located at. This access right here will be the primary access. This is the access where guests will be accessing the parking area. And this access over here, the north of that, is where ADA parking will be located at or accessed by. And also vendors and other people serving the events will be able to park there as well. The project is currently under two willing to add contracts. As you can tell in this table here, Temporary events are allowed under the Conservation Act Rules of Procedure, Statement 3 of the One Zone Program. The applicant is currently not in compliance with the One Zone contract. However, the project is conditioned that the applicant submit a complete application to merge one of the other compliances. They have to merge the contracts as one of the contracts doesn't meet the requirements for the minimum parcel size, and then also provide evidence that there is, in fact, 10 acres of irrigated pastures on site on class 2 soil. And then this image here just shows the entire parcels that are under the One Zone Ag contract. The policy interpretation involves Ag Policy 6 from the county's agriculture element. Ag Policy 6 requires that visitor-serving uses in the agricultural land use categories be purely incidental and secondary to the primary agricultural use of the land. The Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board, or ALAB, and the Ag Department developed the following criteria to ensure that any proposed visitor uses in ag land are at a minimum beneficial to the agricultural industry and farm operators, compatible with long-term agricultural use of the land, and clearly is secondary and incidental to the primary agricultural use of the site. The project was referred to the Ag Commissioner's Office, who has indicated that the proposed visitor-serving use of temporary events is not secondary to the current agricultural use because the equestrian facilities is not considered a primary ag use. The applicant can comply with the Ag Policy 6 by establishing one of the following: 5 acres of irrigated trees or vine crops, 10 acres of annual irrigated row crops, or 100 acres of annual dry farm crops, or a combination of those crops. The applicant asserts that the property's participation in the Woods and Ag program, the existing on-site irrigated pasture, and the existing equestrian breeding and training operations should qualify the property as having an existing primary agricultural use under Ag Policy 6. Additionally, the applicant submitted to California's Department of Conservation acorn industry policy as supporting evidence that equestrians should be considered as primary ag use under the Woods and Ag programs. The intention of the acorn industry policy is to give local jurisdictions the freedom to amend their Woods and Ag programs for the entire jurisdiction and not necessarily apply it on the case-by-case basis. And also the policy relates to the Woods and Ag program only and not to Ag Policy 6, which is the policy that is in question for interpretation today. SLAC has previously reviewed other similar projects where the equestrian specific uses in the agricultural land use categories have been proposed. And historically, the planning department has consulted with the Ag Department to determine if visitor uses are compatible with Ag Policy 6. The following projects are two examples of where applicants were required to demonstrate a primary ag use in order to comply for Ag Policy 6 prior to operating an equestrian on site. So the first project here, the project was conditioned to a minimum of 20 acres of row crops. And also the project was conditioned to be monitored for ongoing agricultural production. The second project there, the applicant planted 100 olive trees that were mature so they can comply with Ag Policy 6 right out of the gate there. So based on this information provided, the Planning Commission has discretion to determine if the equestrian center should be considered as a primary ag use under Ag Policy 6. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission considers approval and find the project consistent with, find the project exempt from environmental review and approve the minor use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. This concludes my presentation.
All right, thank you for the presentation. Any questions for the staff at this point?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little, I just need clarification. So they listed the, when we got the interpretation of Ag Policy 6, they listed three criteria. But we're saying instead of them trying to comply with these three criteria, that we should just accept the current equestrian use as an ag use.
So you're saying like an either or, so planting the row crops, planting the
yeah.
Grain.
So
county council, maybe I can help. The question for you is, you know, is ag for purposes of ag policy 6 simply just food and fiber, right? Row crop, vineyard, that stuff, or does it also include equestrian use? Our ag department has said no. You know, we believe it needs to be food and fiber only. The applicant says no. Look, ag is bigger than that here. It also includes, you know, breeding, training of horses. Our Williamson Ag contracts, you know, recognize that. The state policy has recognized breeding and training of horses as ag. Our board of supervisors says, you know, in terms of interpreting ag policy 6, it's up to the decision maker. So the question before you is the breeding and training of horses an agricultural use and under ag policy 6, or is it limited to food and fiber only? And then if so, is the event facility incidental and secondary to that ag? So it's a two-part question.
Okay. And so I'm just in not experience with getting a recommendation from organization or a, you know, from this ag commission and then being free to not use it. It's almost like, don't ask if you don't want to hear, but now we have it, but you're saying we're free to go our own way.
And then the ag department here to use.
Okay. I mean, I would like to hear from them at some point that, you know, they're feeling it. I guess my other question would be, is this a slippery slope situation? Do you get a ton of these type applications? What would this sort of decision mean for other projects?
I can speak to that just a little bit. We did a little bit of research into just past for temporary events, and those are the couple of projects that we had up on the screen. So there have definitely been a few times in the past we've had a request for events, and the solution has been go establish that in agriculture. That's kind of what's come into question now is doing that planting just so you can have events? Is that what we want to be doing, or should we think about that somewhere? So that's why we're here.
Okay.
I would say that would open the gate for other projects with establishing equestrian facilities to then come in and then request temporary events as incidental to that planning.
I would just say this from the county council office again. I would just say the other thing of that is it has to be incidental, right? So it has to be secondary to that primary act. So in terms of opening floodgates, the question would be is how many other properties out there that have a horse breeding and training operation that is large enough to where it is the primary items, right? And the question for you guys here is it here, right? Because an event facility, especially if you have 40, I mean, that's pretty significant. If you have, or someone's asking for 80, you know, whatever, maybe they turn it down, maybe they so you just want 5. Yeah. So that's kind of the filter or the way that you pull on that slippery slope, if that makes sense.
And is this binding, like if the next equestrian use comes and says, well, you decided it here, you have to allow it here, or is it still going to be a case-by-case basis?
It'd still be a case-by-case basis, but obviously this would set some level of precedent of what the Planning Commission has interpreted Ag Policy 6 to include, to also include not just food and fiber, which is what the Ag Department has historically interpreted it as, and maybe, you know, it gets appealed to the board. Maybe they make a formal, they make a determination too. So so it does set some level of precedent.
Okay. And I guess when we hear from the applicant and other people, I guess then we should hear a little more about the sequestered use and detail.
Yeah.
And my other just last question was, how was this noticed? Because we got something from a neighbor saying they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, Sherman Coon Planning, it's our standard noticing, so property owners within 300 feet. That neighbor that sent the letter last night did receive the notice.
Okay.
And I spoke with him couple of weeks ago and make sure you had the staff support. He's out of town right now, so that's why he sent a letter.
Okay. All right, thank you. That was all my questions.
Well, I'll just make a comment really, but I don't need to have questions. I've known the Varian family for many years, including my folks way more than that ago. And they had some vast holdings in that area. Sheila got this place. She never married to my knowledge. And has run horses there and done this horse situation for many, many, many years. We sold the rest of the property that they once owned. So anyway, it's a situation that may not be done again by anybody because the length of time she's been there and the family involved in that area, they don't have it. And so I can see other people coming in wanting to piggyback on this and us having the terrible time trying to figure out what to do with them. Little background.
So quick question for our kind of understanding, would it be different if it was a boarding facility versus a breeding facility?
So I guess that's the question in front of you, right? Like in terms of what qualifies as ag?
Yeah.
In terms of Ag Policy 6, is it breeding? Is it boarding? Is it training? Like how does that fit within our value system for ag as we identify it as,
yeah,
as a community?
Okay.
And I mean, clearly there's some sort of horse facilities that lends itself more to ag, let's say like branding or, you know, quarter horse industry versus if it was racing, right? Those are the questions that I think are before you, which is, and I think if you look at the application, it's a mix of that, right? And so the question is that the right mix? And are we comfortable with that? Like, are we comfortable with just breeding? Are we comfortable just boarding? Or this level, like, is this sufficient? So.
More question. If you have a map you could show us, I'm just wanting, just this letter we got from the neighbors, they're concerned about light and noise. And I just wondered if you could show us, I think they said the nearest lot was 600, over 600 feet, but it, like, where are structures? You know, how much distance are neighbors going to have from the actual event space?
Okay. Maybe I can just be working with this computer.
Joe, do we want to go to the applicant's presentation?
Yeah.
That'd be great to bring that up.
Yeah, I'll bring that up.
Yeah, thank you.
If the applicant has a presentation, we'd love to let's see that now.
The applicant could please article and then not let her speak before I present.
Good morning. My name is Caprice Arkell. My husband and I are the lucky ones to have acquired this beautiful property. And to your point, Mr. Campbell, Sheila had it for a very, very long time. And the history behind this property is nothing but iconic. And we didn't know what we were buying into. And we just can't believe what an amazing woman Sheila was. And part of the reason that we are asking for this event permit is because we acquired this beautiful property with a lot of deferred maintenance. And with that, we've already spent a lot of money bringing things back up. But some of the events that we would like to do will the money raised by the events will, all the money is going to go back into the property, all of it, whether it's for employees or helping with the barns, new wells, irrigation, whatever. So we want to make the property even more functional and beautiful. The other thing my husband and I always wanted to do was to have a property to be able to have the community use to raise money for charity events. Something near and dear to our heart is raising money for cancer charities. So that is definitely something that we hope to do. We would like that approval to do so. With that being said, having 40 events a year, that's a placeholder. We don't necessarily foresee that happening, but we want to be able to do that if we can. And then having 150 people at the barn or the ranch, that's a lot of people. And again, to the point that you guys have been talking about, boarding and breeding and training are our main are the main aspects of the property. And then also, I just wanted to address Mr. and Mrs. McTee's letter. I'm so glad that they sent that letter because we did do them a disservice by not reaching out. And with that being said, Simon and I are going to address all of our neighbors and community members and have them over in the next 60 days for a meeting so they can get to know us and what our plans. And the other thing about Mr. and Mrs. McTee, it's kind of been a little bit overwhelming after buying this ranch, you know, and getting everything together and with all it was a pump situation that we've had to put in. But we meant to reach out to the McTees. I didn't know that was whose house that was right there. The nearest one, which is far from the property, but we are planning on putting trees and hedges to help reduce any noise or light or disturbance to their property. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today.
All right. Good morning. Thanks for taking my time this morning. So as we've discussed, thanks to the staff for your presentation and explaining the kind of ag issue that we're looking at today. This shows the turf area where the proposed events would be occurring separate from the ag use. You see a round pen behind and then some of the stables. And this barn they call it the showcase barn. It has a bunch of historical photos of Sheila Varian and all the work that they've done. And the stables in there are kind of large stables. Speaking to the acoustic concern raised by the neighbor, this is from the sound, the acoustic study that was completed. In the bottom, you see the yellow line. That shows the person's, their neighbor's property. It's 1,200 feet from where they're proposing the events there. So the property actually extends to the opposite side of Corbett Canyon Road where the ranch manager lives, and there's additional equestrian uses on that part of the sand property, but 1,200 feet is it. And then so speaking to Ag Policy 6, this property is unique, and that's why it's appropriate to be looking at it on this case-by-case basis. When ALAB and the Ag Department came up with that criteria for special events, looking at wineries specifically, and then how it was expanding, the suggested criteria was to establish production ag with these irrigated uses or food production as the criteria to establish a primary ag use. The Board of Supervisors specifically rejected that specific criteria and gave it back to discretion to look at on a case-by-case basis. This property is unique, as Commissioner Campbell mentioned. It's been a long-standing established ag use. The reason that it is a designated ag is because of the Williamson Act's participation. In the 1970s, when Sheila Varian looked at her property and said, I want to preserve this in perpetuity, how do I do that? Williamson Act was a way, and participation with the Rangeland Trust was to look at this property in its whole context of what that open space provides. And so automatic in Williamson Act participation is conversion of a property to ag. So then 15, 20, 30 years later, looking at this property, then in restricting it to production agriculture, it doesn't really fit. So the reason it's ag is because of the Williamson Act participation, and the qualification in the year for Williamson Act was irrigated pasture, not for production ag, not row crops. So that's just important to kind of consider in the context of the uniqueness of the property, and that it has never had production ag. It's always had this as the primary use and as equestrian. So again, a specialized animal facility for horse breeding, boarding, and training. That's the primary use. And so if we look at the enrollment and stewardship with the Rangeland Trust, you look at what the intent of those are, and the underlying parcels are to be managed for the protection of the land resource as a single large property for the continued use of equestrian breeding and boarding. The facilities were built centrally on the property to preserve a significant amount of acreage and open space, which will remain with allowance of these temporary events. Again, this just shows, staff had this map up as well, but here shows the agriculture parcel, which is just the Barren Ranch, surrounded by residential, rural, and rural lands. So it's not large production ag that would be similar to a use proposed on here. I think, you know, adding row crops or something that would be a production ag inconsistency with the ALAP interpretation of what ag is wouldn't necessarily fit correctly at this property. Again, and then just a quote from what the Williamson Act says for this property: the subject property is located in an agricultural preserve to limit the use of this property to ag related and compatible uses in order to preserve a maximum amount of ag land, discourage premature and unnecessary conversion to urban uses, and recognize that such land has public value as open space and constitutes an important physical, social, aesthetic, and economic asset to the county. Again, just to speak to the breadth of what they do out here, they do breeding, full and mare care, training, boarding for up to 200 horses, and showcasing of these animals. Our cows have, it used to be strictly Arabian horses, and they've opened that up to all different kinds of horses, and that's been kind of an exciting expansion of opportunity for the community. And then again, specifically in the ag element, highlights the equestrian sector of the ag economy, saying the raising of horses for work, pleasure, racing, and show purposes contributes a significant portion of ag income to the county. It's just some photos of some of the interior of the facility. This long established, it's not a hobby operation. This is the primary use, and definitely ongoing and purchased by the RKLs to ensure that this could continue. So again, the events limited on the irrigated lawn area, shown right there in the middle, in front of the barn. The property's primary historical and ongoing ag use will continue as horse breeding, training, and boarding. There's no change to the ongoing operations, and all staff will continue as before and remain in the primary and permanent ongoing use of the property. Again, just this is a very unique property. The examples, you know, that staff pulled were very different. It was someone wanting to establish an equestrian facility, or, you know, do an activity on a property that didn't have an established ag use. So the irrigated ag that they have on property and compliance and bringing the pump online, they're working with PG&E to get that going, makes them compliant with their ongoing Williamson Act property, and the consolidation of the two contracts is to bring it up to code with new rules and procedures. So at the time, that was what was allowed, and that's how it was set. And so it just hasn't, they haven't brought them back onto the consolidation, which now we know we need to do. So I'm available for any questions.
How many acres of permanent pasture is it?
So irrigated, there's the entire property is 150 acres. Irrigated, they typically have around 10 to 15. And then there's woodland, which is, has trails, which is not irrigated. And then there's non-irrigated.
I would just comment that being as familiar as I am with these permits, I think just getting that far with this gives us a little help to make a decision on pretty much already happened.
I guess your time is up.
Call down the beer.
That was comment. Any questions for the applicant?
I just had one. If you could go back to the last slide of the event space. Just go back one. So it seems like the area where you are proposing the events already has some pretty thick trees around it. Would this, just as far as orientation, like facing some of the concerned neighbors, would this already kind of be a first line of defense?
Yeah, that was actually addressed in the noise study. Since the events, with my pen. So here's that showcase barn. This turf area is, you know, that event area. So there's these existing structures here, the main property residence is there. There's another barn. So it's within there. And we looked at, you know, where, how to orient the speakers. That was, you know, not a requirement to meet noise level requirements for the county code, but ability to, you know, we can face the speakers. They'd be basically facing away from that concerned neighbor towards the event. So, you know, you can face them behind the building, and they have those structures that are located there. I mean, it's kind of the ideal spot if you're going to have amplified sound is facing that way anyway. So,
and lighting would be the same.
Yeah, lighting same. I mean, there's ability to do, you know, kind of string lights around there. And then if they did need to bring in any, they would be temporary lighting, and they're shielded and, you know, really not able to be seen over the level of the residences. So that does go, the neighbor's resident about 1200 feet and at a higher elevation, but the lights then are right next to the building themselves and not taller than that.
I had a question just about, because now that I see the pictures of how significant the horse business is there and how many horses. So are there typically a lot of cars going in and out, like these aren't just all their horses, right? Like these are other, so I'm just asking, like, it may not be a totally new occurrence to see a bunch of cars going in and out.
Right. Christine, would you like to just for a second?
Yeah, maybe just to expand on that too. If you're doing events where you're bringing in like horse trailers, big things like that, I mean, parking, traffic, all those issues.
Yeah, I'm Christy Galapo. I'm the ranch manager of Mount Vernon Equestrian. I actually worked for Sheila Varian. I've been on the property for 15 years. I guess I can address some of those questions. We did go into a little bit of a lull period after Sheila passed. We got down to very minimal horses and things. And now it's kind of rejuvenated and there is more activity again. Sheila was a lot of people said 200 horses. And now it'll be a boarding facility. There is more traffic and actually keep people out. Has increased a lot over the last year since Stark Health purchased the property.
And that's kind of a
though is how are you gonna manage the traffic between the event and the horse operation event?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so I mean, typically, you know, the regular operations of the ranch, people are bringing in their horse trailers, you know, that's kind of a day-to-day occurrence, maybe. And then, so, but there's two primary, there's two accesses to the property. So if you look on this, the main property entrance where is this page right here is where typically people come in to bring their horses in and out. The parking is going to be occurring to, this is Bay Abbey Lane. And it's going to be occurring in that field over there. So as far as operating, you know, management of equestrian uses, if there's a day of the event, the you know, visitors will be directed to be entering with signage over to into that field, so as not to impact the, you know, the day-to-day operations of horses being brought in or out.
Yeah. Also, the events will happen outside of regular breeding, training, and visiting hours, because we don't want to interfere too much either or.
How many people would you say, because you have a lot going on there, are coming in and out on a daily basis, just like a guesstimate?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's obviously a breeding season. So from February to now, I would say, and summer months, maybe 8 to 10 people a day and at different times a day.
I'm just trying to figure out if this is a very significant change or, you know, that I was just wondering.
And then one other question that they were kind of posing, the question is, like, rodeo-style events on top of the events requested, is, would the rodeo-style events be in that 40 if you do some sort of rodeo events, or is that because it's that's a primary use of the equestrian, is that above and beyond the 40? I guess that would be my question. Maybe that's a staff question, or?
Yeah, Sheriff Clerk Planning, so this application didn't propose any type of rodeo events, so that would be a separate application.
And this is John with the County Council, just a statement, rodeo separate from specialized animal facilities, right? So with specialized animal facilities, you have round pens, you have arenas, you can have, you know, sometimes roping people who are boarding there, they can ride around there, but rodeo is usually a commercial event, tickets, members of the public coming separate.
And I think the note in that letter was they were building a new round pen on that portion of the property, which in the original property, in the original application for events, we had looked at parking our cars across Corbett Canyon, looked at that from a safety perspective of, and removed that. So that's why that was in the application. So no longer.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much. All right. See, where are we on this? Okay, do we have any public comments on this item?
No.
All right, so I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the commission for deliberate.
Oh, hang on. No public comment.
Oh, sorry. We did. Why don't you go ahead and come up, and then we'll get you to fill out the speaker afterwards.
So cool.
Perfect. So you have 3 minutes. The speakers are live. So
you want me to do it first and then fill it out?
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, sounds good. I can't look at your notes while I'm talking. My name is Paul Bischoff. I live two doors down on Verde Canyon Road. And presuming that you saw Patrick McTighe's letter, because it sounded like you were answering questions from that. So nobody has any issue with the day-to-day horse operations, like zero. It's going to be negative concern if it would be that. Like how it is operated right now is perfect. There's no issue with that. And you know, I iterate the disappointment that Patrick said that, you know, small town kind of activity versus big city, let's let the government deal with it. You know, that kind of attitude is kind of hurts my heart a little bit because we're, you know, I still see our area as a small town. I'm a home builder. I go and knock on doors when I'm going to be before a planning commission and, you know, ask the people around surrounding. So that would have been while the noise study was being done, that would have been just like a perfect opportunity to talk to us and let us listen to, you know, the noise while the study was going on as well. So yeah, that's the big part for me, that the missed opportunity for that. That was a big one. Patrick and I and Joe, our neighbors to the other side, we're all small business owners. You know, we get the whole idea of business and cash flow and wanting to maximize opportunities on the property. And, you know, I definitely, we're not curmudgeons that are just grumpy and looking to say no to anybody. you know, by no means. And that, you know, the missed opportunity part of it feels especially difficult just because I have about 99.5% assurance that if they would have called us and had us listen during the noise study, it would be fine because the prevailing winds go the other way. It's such a small chance that that's the case that, like, oh man, that was just this massive missed opportunity to me. And then, you know, then we're all feeling good. You know, that's it's just, you know, what neighbors do kind of thing. So backing up and doing the big picture, my concern, other than like the specific points, was that the didn't like the in the staff report that it said it vested for 20 years. I'm not sure what the vesting for 20 years, and then there was a comment about 2 years. And you know, I don't know if that's a reapplication after 2 years. You guys can tell me about that after the fact. But what my thought is you know, since we missed the opportunity for the noise study, and since we don't really know, you know, I appreciate the professionals that do the noise study. Obviously, they know what they're doing and the science behind it. But we're higher, you know, Patrick mentioned, we're higher than they are. So there might be more carry than you think. So so my proposal is to give a 6 month, you know, just let them fly, do everything they're going to do, and then let's talk about it again in 6 months and have another public hearing. And for us to have an opportunity to say, yeah, we're totally cool with it. Like I said, we're not, no three of us, none of our wives are just curmudgeons and difficult people. We're just looking for, you know, to be able to enjoy, like Patrick said, enjoy our property. And I'm nearly certain that that will be the case and everything will be fine. Close to 100%, but I would have liked a chance to have that opportunity for the next study. So thank you.
No other public comment? Okay, so public comment, and then bring it back to the commission for consideration.
Did you want to answer the question just kind of about the length of the permit and whether 2 years is this looked at, or is it just
the 2 year is a final county planning board? The 2 year is for the applicant to vest the permits and get operational, so that meaning they would have to get the building permit for their, they have some improvements to do as the access road, so they will have to get those within 2 years. And then regarding the 20 years of effective date, that's,
I believe that's a condition we often have on temporary event approvals. It's common to place the time limit of maybe 20 years. I guess that's kind of at your discretion.
No, just add John Wick County Council to 2 years. The idea is let's get this use permit into play within 2 years, because otherwise it's going to abandon. We just don't want these use permits kind of lingering around, right? And then if it's not a fundamental right, so like if you go and get a use permit, let's say for a restaurant, and that's your bread and butter, that's the primary use for that. It's difficult, actually, the case laws actually impose time limits on that, but when it's incidental to your primary use, something like this, case law does say you can impose time limits. And so the idea is, let's say on years 18, 19, they come back, they ask for an extension, they say, we've been good, we've been a good operator, the neighbors are happy, or vice versa, right?
So that's basically built in the whole situation.
In the conditions of approval.
If they don't have a priority party or an event for 2 years, then this goes away and they'd have to come back and apply again.
They would have to meet the conditions of approval that are before, the conditions of approval that say before an event can take place, thou shalt do X, Y, Z, right? Yeah, they have to meet that criteria.
I had a question about the appeals period. I'm just in my mind thinking about how the applicant offered, hey, I'm going to have this meeting within 60 days. I'm going to have a plan about hedges and trees. Let's say we put that in the conditions of approval that these things happen. If neighbors were still unhappy after they'd been consulted and fully brought in, would they still be able to appeal, or would their time be run?
She was one of the planning building. They after like whatever you guys decide today, there's 14-day period where the neighbors can appeal to the board. But as a condition, and adding as a condition of approval, we typically don't do them. We can add, we can maybe craft a condition where the applicant shall provide us evidence within, you know, prior to initiating operations of temporary rents, that they provide evidence that they have contacted the neighbors and, you know, maybe someone else or whatever they talked about like that. That way they can meet that condition and then they can operate.
The other alternative also is just to continue to days for a limited period of time, let the applicant talk to the neighbors, get that feedback, and have another hearing on that date to see what the feedback sounds like. But trying to approve it with a condition of approval that they just contact them doesn't really get to the issues that they're trying to address.
Yeah. And there's no way for us to basically extend that 14-day appeals. That's a statute.
That's by county code.
Yeah. And then what is the enforcement mechanism if, say, we approve it today, they have the event, and there's all of a sudden noise complaints? What is the enforcement mechanism on that?
So that would be enforceable by code enforcement. They're required to comply with the county's noise ordinance. So those complaints would come to code enforcement, and that would be something they could do.
And initially it's fines. Initially it's a warning, and then it's fines, and those fines ramp up relatively quickly. And then if it continues to persist, then staff will go and ask for revocation of the land use permit.
So we have an existing background there that we're talking. Yeah. All my years here, we've approved a lot of stuff, particularly dealing with wineries, et cetera. That has had the problem of, you know, playing music at night and this kind of stuff, and it always seems to get solved without having to come back and be heard or anything like that. Just our county does a good job solving these things.
I guess I would it be possible to ask the applicant, would they be willing to basically just do a date certain and maybe meet with the neighbors and see if we can resolve this without having to, it sounds like it's just the sound issues that the concerns, so.
Right, Lisa Bugrova, agent for the applicant. To speak to specifically the noise study, the acoustic analysis, it's not actually a plane of the music and establishing that. It looks at the ambient noise and then makes assumptions based on dissipation of sound. I would suggest on other projects, we've had conditions requiring notification of neighbors prior to events. So providing the schedule of events when there is a temporary event planning to occur, providing a notification to neighbors ahead of time, and also a contact number for them to contact during the event themselves has been an effective condition to add to projects rather than continuing on trying to figure out what the solution will be right here. And knowing that they do want to understand their neighbors and become part of the community, and send apology from the archives that did not work.
Yeah, I'm wrestling a little bit with process. So thank you for just your suggestion.
May I suggest something?
No, I don't think so. I'll ask the chair.
No, so we're kind of getting to discussion phase at this point.
Okay, I think it would be amenable, but okay. Understood.
I wrestle with this a little bit because I believe in being neighborly, but I sit on the board of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and every time we want to house the homeless or help the homeless, the neighbors say they all want to be involved, but they never, some of them, you're just never going to get on board. And I don't want this to be decided by the neighborhood. It should be decided by law. That's what I'm wrestling with a little bit, but I do want to hear both your thoughts on the agricultural aspect because you're more well-versed in this than I am.
Yeah. Please. You want to start? The equine facility is perfectly qualified as agriculture. I mean, in my view, it makes no sense to say that it's not agriculture. Okay. I think what it is, it's also protecting that land resource is the crucial thing. And you know, if it was just boarding, I might have a bit of an issue, but because there is breeding facilities as well, I mean, I think it's a perfect fit. And trying to force, you know, that the planting bottles or row crops or whatever I don't think that is really the intent of things. I think it's, you know, we're trying to make something fit this little set of rules where I think just with the equine alone, it fits within it.
Well, yeah, if you put all those things in, then you got tractor noise.
That's true, too.
That's good. Seeing all that planting.
Yeah.
And use extra water.
Yeah. So on that issue, I would be willing to make that exception and say this one actually qualifies on the case by case basis.
Okay. Then I would be amenable to this moving forward. Again, the recommendation. But I do think maybe we suggest just some of the conditions that were offered by the applicant that they do have a meeting within 60 days. They do have a plan for trees and hedges to reduce noise and light disturbance, and that they are willing to give neighbors a schedule of events and a contact number. If we could do those three conditions, and then I would move staff's recommendation.
I would actually recommend try to do it before the appeals period, which maybe you
should. Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a short period of time, but it might be better to.
Yeah, maybe make an effort to at least host a public meeting within 14 days. I know clearly some people are out of town, so that.
But
yeah.
We're going to deny this today then and wait to a former time.
No.
I was going to move to approve unless you think.
Yeah, just with those conditions.
Yeah, just because I hesitate to say we need to come back and hear this again. I mean, that's staff time. That's a lot, you know, that's a lot of resources. So, yeah, I would say, gosh, how would I phrase that then? The conditions I said, making every effort to do it within the appeals period, if possible, at least host something and see who comes. Yes, and then moving forward. I know that was a super clear motion.
What I would
suggest. Are you moving?
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
If that's John County Council, if that's the direction, what I would suggest, because these conditions are fairly specific, I would suggest maybe a break.
Okay.
If the commission
I want to hear if they agree with the conditions.
Can we go ahead and repeat that?
I had suggested. Just as they had said, within 60 days holding a public meeting for neighbors, but if we could phrase it in a way saying making every effort to contact neighbors within the appeals period within 14 days, but certainly within 60 days. And then having a plan that they can show neighbors to have trees and hedges to reduce noise and light disturbance. And then the third one was agreeing to give neighbors a schedule of events or notice of events and a contact number that they can contact during events. So those would be the ones I suggest. I don't know what you all think of.
I have a question. Beating this thing to death, I necessarily believe. So maybe County Council, the county staff can explain to me if we were to move to approve a minor use permit, blah, 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 and with findings in Exhibit A, what embedded in that statement solves the problem? If we were to just make a motion on that basis, does that still leave the opening to consider it?
What could happen is that the neighbors don't like that motion. They don't like the probe. They wish some additional things should have occurred, such as notice to them, a meeting, hedges and light, talk about that, and they appeal it, right? And then it goes into the appeal, and then goes to the board over a certain period of time, and we kind of hashed out that. So if you just make that approval, that could be, you know, one avenue that it goes in, or the neighbors and the applicant just work together, and the event occurs, and we deal with on the code enforcement end, right? So,
See, because it says if I was to make the motion, which I would like to do, minor use permit, blah, 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 for Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. So those things appear if we move to what I think that's right here.
What I was trying to do is add to those conditions of approval certain things that she believes will be a betterment to the project, both procedurally and substantively, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to add the things that the applicant offered to do and the things that will hopefully make the neighbors more amenable. I mean, you would hope these things would happen anyway, but sometimes it's better to add them.
Don, the applicant has said that they're planting trees and hedges. They said right now that they are willing to basically give notice to the neighbors when they're doing events. And that they're going to reach out. So it's really all Miriam is doing is reinforcing what the applicant they're willing to do.
So how do we form that into a motion?
That's what we're going to have to give the staff 15 minutes to basically adjust the conditions.
Fair enough.
And then we'll bring it back. So if we can basically take a recess until 10:20, would that be enough time? All right. So
can I make one clarification?
Yes,
Mark, we're planning building. So Commissioner Shaw, just on the trees and hedges for lighting and sound. I think, I don't know if we can condition that trees and shrubs will block the sound.
Yeah.
So I think maybe you just call it a landscape buffer.
Yes.
Trees and shrubs for landscape buffer.
Yes.
And maybe, I don't know if we want to define the area that happens. You don't want the entire perimeter of the property. But, so I think we'll try to craft something in that. Like,
and the applicant probably knows the area more as to where they were meaning to do it.
Okay. So we'll try to craft something. And
thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, perfect. So we'll adjourn for 15 minutes. Perfectly.
Just wind those up. Oh, sure. All right. Elizabeth Moreno with Planning and Building. So we added condition number 3, which states the applicant must host a meeting with the neighbors before within 14 days of approval, but no more than 60 days of approval of the minor use permit on July 11, 2024, to address the neighbors' concerns related to temporary events. The applicant shall provide evidence of the meeting, such as a copy of the notification and a sign-in sheet. The other condition, number 4, this is related to the vegetation buffer. At the time of application for construction permit, the applicant shall provide revised site plan illustrating the location of the proposed landscape buffer along the northwest corner of the property. And number 17, which states that prior to initiating any temporary events, the applicant shall provide evidence that the landscaping has been installed. And then condition number 31, we already had a a notification condition of approval, which the applicant shall notify owners, property owners within 1,000 feet of the exterior boundaries of the temporary event site through email or through a letter. And if a letter is being used, it has to be delivered within 30 days, but no less than 3 days before each event. So this is actually for every event that is held on the site. And it can only be one event per weekend. So, and this is there's A, B, and C provides what the letter should contain, like the contact information, the schedule of events, and how to contact the main person that could address any concerns. So those are the revised conditions for the commission.
So I can hear what the applicants you have to say about it.
They're good.
You're good?
Okay. Then I would like to move approval with move staff's recommendation with the revised conditions.
Perfect. Now I'll second. Okay, so we have motions second. Any discussion? Not Madam Clerk, I'll go ahead and have a roll call, please.
So you've got the minor use permit down already without us repeating it.
Yes. Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Chair Baker?
Yes. All right. Motion carried. So at this point, I'll take a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
At this point, I'll get a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Thank you.